What's that? Yeah, I know. So we know PD's going to be virtual, right?
He's virtual for the tour. I'm not sure if he's virtual today.
Oh, well then maybe. I feel like he'd be here by now.
I feel like he would be here.
Yeah. So. Well, obviously, Coral we know is virtual. Hey, Coral, how's your son doing?
Okay.
Never mind. Thoughts are with you.
Always keep the mute on, just in case. Not that they can hear you.
Hey, good morning. Can y'all hear me okay?
Yes.
I'm at the dealership right now getting my car serviced, and there's a lot of noise in the background, so I'm going to be muted unless I don't need to be muted, just so y'all don't have to hear the background music happening right now.
Perfectly fine, thank you. All right. Oh, I love the no staple. Yeah, dig it. I just work here.
I know, right?
Things just kind of happen. Good morning, chair. Chair of chairs. Yeah, we got a... Oh, is that true? I don't know.
Well, Councilman, it was possible for you to sit
in the center. You could sit where Charlie Cofer's sitting if you want.
Gets in the camera.
I don't want to be in the camera.
Good morning, everyone. It is 9 o'clock. We are going to begin. I know we have a number of individuals that are going to be Zooming in today. We're just going to go around the room real quick to my left and just sort of announce who's in the room at the moment. Go ahead. Yep.
Morning, everyone. Monet Holder.
Jimmy Peluso, chair of this committee.
Michael Boylan, chair of the full committee.
Good morning. Chief Pascal, chief of programs and transitional service with JSO Department of Corrections.
And for those on Zoom, if you can kind of go next.
Anthony Salem, judge with the Fourth Circuit.
Thank you, Judge, for being with us today.
Yes, sir.
Hi, good morning. Michelle Khalil, County Court Judge.
Thank you, Judge, for being with us today.
Good morning. This is Coral Messina with the State Attorney's Office. I'm home with a sick kid, so my apologies.
How's he doing, Coral?
You know, kids. He's jumping on a couch, but he has a fever.
David Boswick, I see. Do you want to introduce yourself, sir? All right, Mr. Guerrero.
Good morning. Yeah, hi, everyone. I'm Jerry Guerrero. I'm the global director of HDR's Civic and Justice Program. Me personally, I've been doing justice architecture my entire career, which is about 35 years now. Jeez, hard to say that now. Passion of mine that back in the 80s, I started doing jail work and justice work with a firm when I got out of school, and I really found a passion for it, working with the client and just understanding their passion and trying to make environments better for these individuals, because I do think we can make a change with the designs and the built environment. So a little bit about myself, and really appreciate being here.
Mr. Guerrero, we really appreciate you being here as well, and I genuinely liked everything you just said, so I'm excited to hear what you have to present to us today. Mr. Weflin, my apologies.
Hi, no thanks. Eric Weflin, I'm a justice principal with HDR. Like Jerry, I've spent pretty much my entire career in the justice sector, designing everything from additions and renovations to new construction. Recently completed a study for and master plan for Hernando County. So answering a lot of the same questions that you're asking. Anyway, I really appreciate the opportunity to be here.
Excellent. Well, thank you so much for being here, sir. We really appreciate HDR being heavily involved in this process. As I understand it, you're presenting to other committees as well. It's incredibly important that we get this right. And some of your comments, really give me a lot of hope for what a new jail, if we get to that point, may look like. All right, so everyone has the notes from last meeting. Again, I apologize for canceling the meeting that we were supposed to have. We are meeting next week. Is that correct, Brooks?
We have our tour next week.
Oh, we have our tour next week. Excellent. That's on Thursday? Okay. So just keep that in mind, everyone. So Thursday, we are going to be doing a tour of the UF Health, the infirmary that's run by JSO. It's an important part of the intake portion, which is why we're kind of taking a look at it. We're just going to see, you know, what that process looks like for how JSO transports individuals into that location, what that location has that perhaps the jail currently doesn't, and what a new jail may need, different kind of efficiencies that we could be looking for. Do you think you'll be joining us for that, Councilman Boylan?
I'll take a look at my calendar. I'd love to. Thank you.
Who doesn't love going to the hospital? What a fun
thing. As a visitor.
Yes, definitely as a visitor. So please kind of keep that in mind. I believe that's at what time? My apologies for looking at my phone right now. So 9 a.m. on the 2nd. If you are interested in doing that tour, we've kind of booked about an hour and a half. I feel like that's probably about right. If you'd like to come on that tour as well, just give us a quick confirmation email to either Brooks or to Tyler.
Technically speaking, I cannot attend. It would not be have to be a noticed. Is it a noticed meeting?
It will be, yes. Oh, Judge Kofor did show up.
All right. Uh-oh. I'm in your seat, so I'm moving over.
Wherever you'd like to sit.
Put you right there.
That's fine. Shuffle everyone else.
I was sitting over there.
No. That's fine. My apologies. I had a doctor's appointment this morning.
So. I'm not going to lie to you. I thought you were going to zoom in. I would have never envisioned ever that you would not be 20 minutes early. For a meeting. And we're happy to have you, of course. So I'm sorry, Brooks, you were saying. So this is going to be a notice meeting, correct? Okay, yes. It most certainly will. And Judge Kofor, you're also, we were just talking about it, on the 2nd, which is Thursday morning at 9 a.m., we're going to be doing our tour of UF Health. It was going to be a notice meeting because you're invited and I'm invited and you and I are the voting members of this board, but also because Councilman Boylan will hopefully join us as well. It certainly needs to be noticed.
Thank you very much. I will be out of town on that day,
okay.
But I know the facility.
You're familiar with the process. Excellent. Okay. Yeah. I certainly do not. So I'm very intrigued to see what it looks like. Please take a look at notes from last week. If there are any major questions, I'll give everyone a quick moment. If there are any major questions or concerns with the summary, or if there needs to be changes, please make a note on here and just hand it over to Tyler at the end of the meeting. But I'll give everyone a couple minutes to take a look real quick. Was it sent out to other members on Zoom, who are on Zoom? It's happening now? Okay. So for those of you on Zoom, we're looking at our the special committee notes from the 13th of October. All of you should be getting an email, hopefully shortly, to take a look at them yourselves. Ms. Holder just recommended we travel to Nashville, Miami, and Atlanta as a committee. Maybe on our own dime. But I'm all about it.
You know, on that, I did talk with Melissa Melson about the Nashville facility.
Mm-hmm.
And I am actually going up to the Titans game in January, so I may try to get with the sheriffs and go by and see that facility. She says it's very impressive.
Hey, this is Jerry. Are you talking about the Davidson County new facility?
I'm not sure what county, but it's the Nashville facility.
Yeah. I actually was the lead designer in my previous life on that project. I know it like the back of my hand. It's actually got a really cool diversion component to it at the intake area.
Well, with that said, everyone kind of, keep looking at the notes throughout the meeting when you kind of get a chance and make comments. We'll probably break a little bit early, so we'll have some time in here if you do want to make notes or make recommendations to Tyler. But we can go right into the presentation by HDR. Mr. Guerrero seems overeager to get involved in this. And
I
love
that. I heard Nashville, and I spent much time down there with the sheriff and his group doing the design of that facility. And like I said, the diversion piece that they're trying is really a neat component to, you know, alternatives to folks going into the jail system. So it just sparked my interest. Sorry about that.
No, not at all. And I am serious. We can go right into the presentation with HDR. This is the kind of enthusiasm that we need to hear. I think, you know, I've been looking to make sure we have other examples from not just counties in our state, but outside of our state, what other kind of models may exist.
Absolutely. Hey, David, can you hear us now?
Yeah. Can you see me and hear me now?
Yes.
I apologize. I was on before, but for some reason, my audio and my video was both blocked, so... apologize for that. I didn't get a chance to introduce myself. I'm David Boswick, justice planner and designer with HDR. I've been doing jail planning and design for over 30 years now. And one of the projects that we wanted to feature today was Franklin County in Columbus, Ohio. And I was the lead planner and designer on that project.
David, I'd also mention your involvement with NIC. If you would.
Yeah, so I'm also a technical resource provider with the National Institute of Corrections, and so I teach how to do planning, jail planning and design to counties throughout the country.
David, you want to lead the presentation since you were intimate planner and designer?
Sure. Looks like it's already up on the screen, right?
Yes.
Yeah, we can see it here.
Yeah, okay, I can see it just fine. So let's go to the next slide. So this is we wanted to take a look at the intake and release center as part of the Franklin County Correctional Center in Columbus, Ohio. This facility is being built in phases, and the ultimate capacity is going to be in the range of about 2,400 beds altogether. Next. So some key information about the intake center. Franklin County has about 30,000 admissions a year. So a lot of folks come through. And one of the key design considerations here was to have one-way flow through the intake and release area. And so what that means is that we wanted to separate people who are coming in to the facility from people who were being transported out. Whether it be a court transport or being released from the facility. And as part of an overall goal of trying to divert and deflect people from the facility, the intake area has embedded in it medical staff, mental health staff, pretrial services, and records staff to help with that process. Another key component that you'll see here is what we call a pre-booking area. That's an area that's between the vehicle sally port and the booking area. And that's where arresting officers complete their paperwork. But most importantly, that's where correctional officers do their screenings to determine whether or not it's appropriate to have that person enter the facility. So they'll do mental health screenings and medical screenings there. We also have a rapid resource center, which is on the back end of intake and release. What this is that as people leave the facility, we have an area where counselors can meet with them and help them get connections and linkages to community-based organizations. And just in terms of general design concepts, we use open waiting. We have views of nature, natural light. This is a very stressful area, and most, if not all, the people who come into this facility have experienced some sort of trauma in their lives. And so we wanted to design it in such a way where we can start to ease the tension, lower the stress of the folks that are coming. Next.
Real quick, sir. I'm sorry to interrupt. I just have to acknowledge the fact that Reggie Fullwood, a member of our committee, has also just joined us. Just want to put that out there. Sorry.
Okay, great. Yeah, so the design of this really centers around this booking release counter that's in the center of the, I don't know if you can see my cursor, you probably can't, but that lavender type, that lavender space there, the booking and release counter, everything flows and circulates around that. And so on one side, we have the booking process on the north side, and then on the south side, we have the release process.
And David, just real quick, if you all have questions during this, please jump in. You know, we like to make this informal because I think that if you have questions, I think engaging in that conversation might be helpful. So anyway, I just wanted to throw that out.
I actually appreciate you saying that. I did want to ask real quick, in the construction of this this new facility, is there also a new police headquarters involved in sort of how this is built out?
No, this is strictly jail.
Understood. Okay.
I do have a question to follow up quickly. What is the square footage of this floor?
Of this floor right here?
Apart from the
south just floor. The intake area?
Yes.
So I think we're at about 12 to 15,000 square feet altogether.
Thank you.
Yeah. Don't hold me to that, but that's what I recollect that square footage being. Any other questions?
Keep going.
What we wanted to do was in the center have a booking release platform where most of the staff, correctional officers, assessment folks, they would operate, and then everything would circulate around that platform. So what I'm going to do now is look at the different various components so you can see some of the design features of those. And I'll start with the vehicle solid port. So next. If you could change the slide. There we go. So we have a large vehicle sally port. We designed it for 10 patrol vehicles. And so they have parking spaces along the side. Those parking spaces are extra wide. They're 10 feet wide, so it makes it easier for officers to bring the arrestees out of the cars. It's large enough for two Greyhound buses, and we have bypass lanes. So we see this area as being rather busy, and so we want to make sure we had enough elbow room in order for the vehicles to maneuver inside the sally port. This is Columbus, Ohio, and so they have a lot of snow, and so it was important that we have trench drains in order to get rid of the snow and rain that accumulates, and we also have a brushed concrete finish to the floor to give us traction, because we didn't want to have a slippery or smooth concrete floor. The bifold doors that you see here are high speed. They open in just about 1 to 2 seconds, and that was a key design consideration because we wanted to have those doors open quickly and close quickly, and also the maintenance on these doors is a lot less than a typical overhead door. Another thing that I would point out is that if you look over to the right-hand side, you see an intake door, and then further down, there's a door for port transport. And so, again, going back to this concept of one-way flow, arrestees come in through the intake door, and then they come out through the port transport door. Any questions about this component?
None here.
Okay, let's move on. So this is the pre-booking area that I mentioned before. This is where the arresting officers bring in the arrestees. We have 12 stations for officers to complete their paperwork. One of the things that we added to this is that we have pass-through holding cells that go between the vehicle heliport and this space right here. And the reason we did that is that you may have an unruly arrestee that you need to put into a holding cell right away. And so that's provided in this space.
I think another thing I'd add for some consideration is, you know, what we're seeing in some areas is a safe booking. Safe book is what we call it. It's a smaller booking area that you can get. Let's say you get a high profile type individual that's arrested for some reason, that they do not have to go through regular booking. Say it's a politician, or it could be a high profile type of arrest. So it also is a good area if you get somebody like David just talked about that could be, that's very violent. So you don't get them in the main booking area to disrupt everybody else that's actually behaving. And you can get them to secure holding much quicker, but you can get them booked in a separate area. So just something else to think about that we're seeing now, including a pre-booking area is a small area, which is called safe book, that has all the similar amenities, but just at a much smaller scale.
I don't know what you're insinuating with this whole political officials going to jail.
I
have had concerns about Councilman Boylan myself. I expected he'd be you know in there one day.
It could be an NFL or Major League Baseball athlete, just that high profile where you don't want to get him through the regular booking, and you know also the violent type individual too that may have serious mental health issues. So just something to think about that we're seeing that as you go through the planning process, I think is something that should be considered.
Understood. Keep going.
So off of this room, we have a DUI testing. We have a medical and mental health screening. We have an alcove off to the side so that can happen in private. So we are in compliance with HIPAA standards. Big design considerations was to get natural light into this space. And so up above the ceiling that you see there, that's a large skylight. So we're bringing natural light into the space. And then the windows that you see on the left-hand side, that provides view from the booking counter into the space. So it's visually connected to the booking area overall. Next. So this is just inside the booking area. Over on the left, this is where they do a property inventory. So they collect all the valuables. They put them up on a counter. And I don't know if you can notice, but up above that, those counters are cameras. And so they're recording they're recording the taking of the property, putting it in bags and sealing it. So this is the mail area. The door that you see over to the left is an area for women, so they are taking it into a more private space for this process. The booking counter is a raised platform. Like I said before, its shared function is with the release. And not only does this platform include the booking officers, but it also includes mental health folks and classification officers. Next. So this is the view from the booking platform. It's located in the center of the booking area, so it has complete views of the entire intake and release area. Here we're showing the open waiting area. On the left-hand side, it is the female waiting area, and on the right-hand side is the male waiting area. So they're adjacent to one another, but we put a part-high wall there so they could be visually separate. The booking counter, they have large, comfortable workstations. And again, we have windows and natural light coming into this space in order to lower the stress level. And if one of the things I think that you'll notice is that the furniture that we use is more normative. Again, what we're trying to do is create a space that is similar to what you would find in a hospital in order to lower those stress levels.
So this waiting area is, I assume then, for arrestees who have not yet been booked or have been booked and waiting to go to the next step? Or?
Yeah, that's right. They're in the process of being booked. So they may have not been booked yet, or they're in the process of being booked. Yeah, and these are people who are compliant. And
sure,
most of the folks who come into a booking area are compliant.
I see. You've
and
got
if we have people who aren't compliant, we have holding cells for those folks.
Got it. You see a wall or a bank of phones there as well. Do they have obviously have access to free access to phones?
Yeah, free access to phones. That was one of the things that they wanted, the client wanted, because they want to help folks get released from jail as soon as possible. So, yeah, they have free access to phones, also to video visitation as well.
Is that not the case right now in the current jail? Do we know?
Limited. I think it's limited. Once they get up, they're given a code. I mean,
they are allowed to use the phones in the booking holding cells prior to going upstairs, and those are free.
There's not a lot of them, are there? Just a handful of phones?
Just a handful in that cell.
I have a question. So you mentioned that this is a shared with the release function. Can you say more about the flow of traffic?
Sure. If you could go back to the...
maybe the floor plan.
Yeah, the floor plan.
You can see the different, I think it shows the different colors for the, the red. Yeah, go ahead, David.
Yeah, the red line represents the people who are coming into the facility for the first time. So they're being processed through. So they're touching the booking release counter on the north side. And then on the south side of the booking release counter is where we have release. And so that's a different traffic flow around the booking counter. We wanted to keep these folks separate from one another in order to better manage people as they work their way through the intake area.
Thank you.
Does that answer your question?
It does. I was just trying to visually see the separation between the two different populations as they're either coming in or going out, but the map gave
sure. Well, so we have other photographs, and maybe that will help show the relationship between these two.
Do the lines help at all? You kind of see when they're leaving. The green line is on kind of the south side of the intake booking release area. So they're going through a separate flow where they're not commingling to keep that separation.
Yep, I see. Thank you.
And I just want to know, so we're the non-compliant individuals are in these holding cells in the red over all the way to the left?
Yeah, that's correct.
Okay.
Correct.
All right.
May I ask a question?
What is normal procedure?
I wanted to ask about the function of the two computer screens or monitors.
Please come up to the microphone, ma'am. I'll let you speak. Just be very brief.
Yes.
And also make sure you fill out a public comment card.
Yep. I was wondering.
I'm sorry. Please announce who you are.
Oh, I'm Marie McGraw-Wood, retired college instructor, faculty senate rank full professor. 37 years teaching in California, 12 years retired.
All right.
And I'm a homeowner in Jacksonville for 6 years.
All right.
So I would also like to ask my question about the two computer screens that are appear to be one on each side. Their function, please. And the same picture of the intake area. Booking
platform. Oh, sure. Yeah.
I mean, they would appear to be just kind of the normal booking system, I would imagine. Is that correct?
I see a woman on a phone here, and I'm wondering if she's calling for a bond to be released, or whether she's on her, on recognition till she comes back for arraignment or trial. I'm not sure of the exact order.
Okay, ma'am.
Also, I'm concerned that they have access to legal aid phone numbers. And that they have access to...
So I think this is more... This is going to be more of a public comment at the end. All right. Thank you, ma'am.
Thank you.
Well, thank you, ma'am.
Since you don't know what the function is, I needed to express my concern...
I understand.
...that people like this lady have access to being able to call...
Thank you, ma'am. Please fill out a public comment card, and we'll bring you back up at the end as well. All right.
I have one question.
We'll do public comment at the end, Mr. Oliver.
If it's the same standard... As her, you allowed her to ask one question. I want the same opportunity.
One question.
You get one question. Go for it, and then we'll bring everyone back up at the end. It's got to pertain to kind of what they're presenting right now, though.
What they're presenting.
And also, please announce your name.
I'm Carter Oliver. Address is on file. One of the things that I want to say is that the booking area is not really important. The overall build out of the facility is really important. And I want to know why wasn't that not also in this?
So I think we're still very early into the presentation.
I can speak to that, too.
Oh, please.
Because it's not part of this particular working group. It's a separate working group that's focusing on the housing facility. Chris Miller is heading that group up. This group is strictly about intake, adjudication, recidivism. So that's where the focus is.
Thank you, Mr. Oliver. All right. Please proceed, sir.
Okay. Next slide, please. This is just another view of the open waiting area. We have seating for 50 men and 24 women. There's been a lot of research done in terms of how to lower stress levels.
Coral, if you have a question, Coral, you can just kind of jump in. You're a member of the committee.
Okay. I have two quick questions before we moved on. I love all the natural light, and I wondered if there are any considerations, because we're prone to have hurricanes, that we'd need to account for? And then my other question is whether there's any sort of area in the vestibule for corrections officers to search people before entering the pre-booking area.
So the way I'll address the search to begin with, the arresting officers are to do a pat-down search before they bring someone into the pat-down area. That's followed up by another search by the correctional officer in the pre-booking area. So that's done a couple times throughout the process. in terms of natural light, yes, that's something that we'd like to have in our designs. And we don't necessarily have hurricanes in Columbus, Ohio, but if we were to design a facility in Florida, we would take that into consideration.
Absolutely. Obviously, where these kind of components end up in the facility, most likely be created with courtyards. As you can see there on the right with the natural light and you can see the vegetation and kind of the nature, but it would be, no different than how you design for, the exterior of a building, in Florida, with all the, the hurricane regulations for glazing an exterior wall. So, but I do think it's something that, is really important, because it is the highest stress level of the facility of individuals coming in, not knowing what to expect. So, it's a great feature, and it really came out really well, and they really do. It seemed to be working really well with the detainees coming in.
Does that answer your question?
Sure. Thank you.
Okay. One other thing I'd point out here is, we do have access to telephones. That's to help them secure bond and speak to legal counsel. We have televisions that are in this area, and that's to provide orientation information. In order to reduce stress levels, we want to make sure that everyone who's in here knows what's happening next. So that's very helpful.
Is there, to the young lady's point, earlier question, with respect to information for bond opportunities, is there a handout or something given? I know it's not a facilities question necessarily, but maybe it's posted on the monitors as to phone numbers or numbers they can contact.
Yeah, that's the entire point of the monitors, is to give them that type of information. Because the goal here is that if folks can make bond or be deflected from the facility, that's the main goal here at intake. And so they're going to give them as many opportunities as they can, so they don't have to stay at the facility.
Thank you.
And one of the things that I would note is that about 70% of the folks who come into this facility are released within 24 hours. Hmm. And that's something that they want to increase. Next. Just wanted to put this slide up here so you can see the identification stations. We have two here. It's all electronic. They're not using ink anymore for fingerprints. And over on the left-hand side, we have a pretrial services office. I don't have a good photograph of this, so I inserted a rendering of what that looks like. Here's where we pretrial services collects information on the individual so that they have all the information that's needed for when the person goes to arraignment and appears before the judge. Because what we found over the years is that the more information that a judge has on an individual, the more likely that person will have a reduced bond or even no bond at all. Next. Someone mentioned holding cells. We do have a variety of holding cells, single occupancy group holding cells. They're designed to be ligature resistant. I just wanted to point out a couple of details here for the correctional officers who may be in attendance. We have food passes that are mounted on the side so that restraints can be placed and maintained on the folks as they go into the holding cell. Also in terms of cleanliness, we have floor drains that are located outside the holding cells so they can be easily cleaned. And we have these drains outside so that detainees can't mess with them.
I'm sorry, what is the other thing, what is ligature resistant?
I'm sorry.
What is that? What does ligature resistant mean?
Oh, so we're designing the holding cell in such a way that there aren't any tie-off points for people to maybe hang themselves inside the cell. So, yeah, there's no points where people can tie something off.
Yeah, and similar, no sharp corners. Pieces of for toilets, like you said, bunks or the seating areas, and obviously not being able to tie off anything, as you've heard some horror stories across the country of individuals committing suicide in these areas, specific areas, again because of the high stress level. So making sure that we cover all those things from a security and safety standpoint.
I'd be interested in seeing a rendering and or a picture of one of those cells if I could at some point. Not today, obviously.
Sure.
And
we can get that.
And I guess, so you said this is being built in phases. Has this portion already been built? Is this the...
Yeah. It's completely built. What's being built in phases is some of the housing.
Okay.
David, why don't you talk a little bit about when it opened, how many they have now, and maybe a little bit about the phasing. But it is occupied now, and it is probably one of the newest facilities in the country, I would say, at this size. And obviously, you know, maybe David, talk about how you're working and have done presentations with some of the sheriff's staff. They're very proud of the facility and how many tours they're giving. They're giving a lot of tours to other counties around the country, it seems like, on a kind of routine basis. So if you want to talk a little bit about population now and what it's going to be and maybe the different classifications.
Sure. They are giving a lot of tours on a weekly basis to folks from throughout the country. The building is being built in phases. This is phase one, and it was completed last year and occupied earlier this year. In phase one, what they wanted to do was create all the infrastructure for a complete build-out. So that meant that the intake area, the administrative areas, kitchen, laundry, all the mechanical spaces are built for a total build-out of 2,800 beds. In terms of the housing for this phase, they wanted to take care of all of the folks that require special needs. So this has maximum security, restrictive custody, and also all the medical and mental health housing. So taken all together, phase one comprises approximately 860 beds. Phase two, which is being added on and is going to be completed first quarter of next year, is another 400 beds. And those beds are primarily for women who are in the facility. One of the things that has happened in Ohio is that they've had an increase in drug abuse and opioid abuse. And so that's a lot of women have been caught up in that. And so they needed to provide housing for those folks. So second phase is 400 beds, primarily for women. And then the third phase, which will be starting design in the coming months, will be the complete build-out for the general population of males. So the actual number that we build is still being discussed right now, but that will probably be in the range of about 1,200 to 1,800 beds altogether that are going to be part of phase three.
So one of my questions, and kind of moving forward in general, this is where my head's going to be, especially for the full committee as we sort of meet and look at future options. Can we see if there's actual data, maybe not necessarily with this facility, but other facilities you've built that are a similar type, to see if there's a legitimate correlation with what these new facilities look like and a reduction in, again, attempted suicides or harm, you know, personal harm to themselves, things like that. We just want, I think that kind of evidence, that science-based, go ahead. That would be very helpful to us.
That's a great question. We're actually, one of the benefits of being the size that we are, we actually have a research team, and we're actually doing that research right now in a facility in Virginia, and we're already starting to get data back. So using these design principles of natural light, you know, colors, materials, and we can get that to you. We're already finding that there is less staff absenteeism. There has been less assaults on individual to individual and also individual to staff. But we have that data, and I think that's kind of what you're looking for is, you know, where is that true evidence?
Yeah, it most certainly is. And I mean, you know, even if it's relatively, you know, maybe less robust, but if you can show, hey, under the old facility, there were 75 attempts of suicide
exactly
under the new facility. Okay, we got
that's exactly what we're doing. We're taking the model from the old facility and seeing really, as they move forward to this kind of new model, is this new model of these design principles and biophilic design principles and, you know, is it truly making a difference to these individuals? And we're finding absolutely. So, yes, we can absolutely pull that together and share that with you all.
Similarly, you mentioned staff absenteeism. Are you talking about correctional staff?
Yes, okay. Yes. Just being in an environment because, you know, as Dave is probably going to talk about it, but staff amenities, staff respite areas is such a big thing as we look into these facilities now because, again, the mental health of the staff, being able to get away from high stressful areas as well at times, having those same amenities. They're in there, you know, obviously your staff, obviously your most important resource, they're there actually longer than these detainees. So them having those areas of those same principles is really big for them being there on a daily basis. So we believe that is something truly that needs to be considered hard when you go into these and very seriously because of those, the issues that they're dealing with on a daily basis. So, so the staff absenteeism is regarding the new facility design because of the environment that they're in, that they actually want to be there and they feel safe and secure and working with the individuals.
And that certainly is important because I know that we've seen, from our friends in the corrections world, they've said that retention is incredibly difficult for keeping folks around, and I'm certain that the conditions of the jail probably play a role in that.
To your point, you know, retention and recruitment is very difficult. Every county around the country is, you know, dealing with it and providing, you know, a better environment, a more professional type environment does help with that. And providing those amenities for staff truly does help with recruitment and retention.
Thank you. It's Michael. Tracy's in the room, so she knows this already. I'm not sure how much background she's given you. We've established, essentially, as it relates to the new facility, three working groups, and this is just one of them, the intake, adjudication, recidivism. Another one is on housing, and the third one is on what we're calling holistic services, which really focuses on the mental health, behavioral health services, and hopefully we bring these all together. So as you take a look at these things, and I am interested in learning more about how you differentiate hardened criminals, if you will, from those folks who, you know, create a misdemeanor or crime that really is an outgrowth of their mental health or behavioral health issues.
Yep.
So as we go down the road here, and I can't thank you enough, HJR and Tracy, for your participation in all of these, because, you know, you guys are the subject matter experts when it comes to, you know, best practices out there. And so having the kind of comprehensive information and research that you're doing now would be really absolutely helpful to us as we move this forward. Thank you.
Yep, absolutely. And, you know, we look forward to, you know, talking about all those different components that need to be considered, like you said, you know, and how you separate those classifications and how you treat them separately. And the environments that they're in. And I think David, as we continue through this, we'll talk about that as well. But we definitely have to be able to separate individuals appropriately so that they're going to the right spots for those, you know, those individuals of, you know, like you said, the misdemeanor that don't need to be in maybe a certain high security area. And I think that's one thing that you need to consider when going into the planning process is, you know, thinking about the diversion area. And if you do go tour Nashville, you'll see that is, you know, how can we maybe put individuals that don't necessarily need to be under the sheriff and, you know, provide them opportunities for maybe some substance abuse or mental health treatment that because they maybe don't necessarily need to be in jail. They just need a little help. And I think that's a feature that you'll see and hopefully embrace because we're seeing more and more counties around the country trying to figure out how can we divert people that don't necessarily, because maybe the crime really wasn't, you know, maybe they stole a pizza, maybe they were hungry.
Right.
And giving them opportunities and spaces where they can be treated but released without, you know, really going into the justice system.
Sure.
So,
and we are seeing the implementation of call responders is now a fairly common practice with JSO, as much as they
That's
can.
Great.
So we can identify and differentiate those folks.
Yep.
Council Member Peluso, I would really encourage you to reach out to Councilmember Johnson. Obviously, there's a significant overlap in his work on holistic services, particularly in light of the fact that you're touring the facility next week. I'd let him know about your meeting and see if we can get him and perhaps members of his working group join you as well.
Thank you, Councilman Boylan. That's a good idea. I'll DM him on Instagram. That's where you can find him. Miss Holder, I believe, had a quick question, and then we'll go to you, Judge.
I do, and my question might overlap with the housing or the facilities, but just wondering, like, what's the thought in the design as it relates to mitigating outbreaks of infections and diseases, like whether it's the materials that are being used, the ventilation that's thought about in the facility. Just if we could get some more information about that, that'd be great.
I'll jump in. Obviously the finish systems, you know, the antimicrobial type coatings, we're definitely looking at more. Obviously, we all went through the pandemic, and you know, most likely there'll be another one. And so we are seeing a lot of modifications because all the issues that these facilities dealt with on being able to separate and obviously maintain outbreaks is really critical now. So we're addressing the HVAC systems in these units. You know, before, you know, in the past, you'd see maybe a couple negative pressure cells in a facility like this. But now we're starting to do not only negative pressure, but positive pressure in day rooms. So you can, you know, if you have an infectious outbreak, you have better flexibility to maybe put those folks in a day room, but you can negative pressure the entire day room versus just a couple rooms. So we're seeing those changes, and you know, obviously we're all trying to figure it out is how we're going to deal with the next one, but providing that flexibility of separation, unit sizes, so we don't have too many people in one area. So that's really a lot of the considerations we're taking into account when we're looking at, you know, the classification breakdowns, but really a lot of it's in the engineering systems. Now to your question of how can we better maintain air in the facility as well. So a very good question and something that we're still, you know, we're still trying to figure out after coming out of the pandemic. Does that answer your question?
Yes, thank you.
I think also that pre-booking area is key to that as well, where assessments can be done not just for mental health but physical health, where you're not co-mingling people who obviously are, you know, potentially showing symptoms, and they can be separated relatively quickly and are not intermingled. So you have those behavioral health issues where people are separated to keep stress levels down, and then similarly, you know, for health reasons, they can be separated. And designing a facility that has the spaces that have been described that give you flexibility in how the facility is managed.
No, that's a good point, Eric.
Judge Cofer?
Thank you.
Yeah, I've got a couple of questions, Charlie Cofer here. On your schematic on page 5, I assume that this is only a small portion of the ground floor.
Can you pull that up so I just understand what you're looking at?
Yeah. Way back. There you go.
Yeah, yeah. So I think, like David said, this is about 12 to 15,000 square foot area. David, what's the square footage of the facility?
Oh, I knew you were going to ask me that. let's see. I think we're, for this space, I think we're at over 200,000 square feet. So we're just looking at a portion of the intake area here.
Okay. Yeah, my question is, I guess it comes from looking at the green arrow for releasing. When I think of releasing, I think of people making bond and actually getting out. And so I was a little concerned. Are you talking about when people are released, you're releasing them through the Sallyport?
Yes and no. When it comes to release, the people who are going to the Sally Port are generally people who are going to have been committed to prison.
Okay. Yeah.
Actually, it should be like a two-way arrow when it comes to the release side, because over on the left-hand side is the main circulation corridor that goes to housing, and that's adjacent to this. If you look at the stair in the upper left-hand corner,
right.
That is where the release lobby is, and so most folks are going to be going out through a vestibule next to that stair, and adjacent to that, that's where we have the Rapid Resource Center, and that's where we have counselors that can help folks as they leave get connections to those services out in the community, whether it be mental health services, substance abuse services, things like that. So, the release goes in two directions.
Gotcha.
Out the front of the building and then also through the vehicle sally port.
Is that also the releasing connected with like a public waiting room? Because most people call
yes.
a friend or...
Yes. Right. Yeah, and because one of the things that we realize is that when you release someone, they don't, especially in the wintertime in Columbus, it's quite cold, and so we wanted to provide them with a space for them to wait for their ride to come. And we placed the Rapid Resource Center, which is open 24 hours a day, adjacent to that lobby, hoping that folks that are released will come in and seek services, and so they have some enticements to bring them in, such as snacks and drinks and coffee, and probably most important, phone charging stations. So as they come in, they can start to talk to them about, why they came to the facility in the first place, why they were arrested, and try to understand what are some of the underlying issues as to how they ended up here.
Yeah, I think another thing is, we can provide kind of that overall floor plan, so to speak, to give you kind of and maybe provide some different colors so you know where the different components of release, the Rapid Resource Center, administration, and you can kind of see how it all works and flows together. So we could absolutely do that, which might give you a better understanding of the overall facility. But again, it is the newest one. As you're thinking about your tours, I would highly recommend this. Touring this facility because each facility you want to get better, and and we look at facilities, whether they're ours or others, on how we can implement components to each one that you do is providing better amenities, better environments. So again, this is the newest one of this size in the country, so I'd put it on your list for sure.
Another question that I have, in terms of design standards for capacity, are there some nationally recognized standards or recommendations for capacity of a facility based upon, for example, size of the metropolitan area it's going to serve?
Great question. David, you might want to talk about it. It's really based on, we're looking at your data through your court system. You want to talk about that, how NIC maybe takes a look at that, David, on how part of that process, that pony process of how you determine the right size of your facility?
Everyone incarcerates differently throughout the country. When we looked at Franklin County, they made the decision that they wanted to lower their incarceration rate by 30% within 4 years. And they've been able to do that, and they've done it by deflecting people from jail, by looking at how people process through the court system, and they looked at things like probation. Are people sent back to the jail with the minor sanctions to their conditions of release? So it's really an individual thing, and to be honest, it takes work. To maintain a low incarceration rate, but that's something that Franklin County wanted to do. They wanted to see less incarceration. So they looked at the entire system to lower that rate, but they also looked to see what they could do while they had people in custody, and that's why one of the reasons why they built a new facility was to provide services in order to lower recidivism and keep people from returning to jail.
I think it's a holistic approach when counties look at this, and I think that's why it's critical to bring in during this process, talk with the judges, talk with probation, talk with how they're looking at, those first appearances and what the judges want to do as well, because like David was saying, that affects, maybe who and who is not coming into this facility. So it's kind of that holistic judicial kind of looking at it all through the microscope rather than just, individual pieces. I think everybody needs to work together on, what's the direction that you all want to go and so, getting everybody involved.
So I'm glad you brought that up. I was going to ask, what is kind of is there a courtroom in this location? Is it attached to the courthouse or is it very closely connected? I was just talking or just thinking about, I know you have snow up there. I know you've got, different weather conditions than we do. So if you can't get someone to the courthouse for first appearance, do you do Zoom? Like what is the procedure? What is the process? Because right now we do a lot of our first appearances via Zoom for those in the pre-detention center.
So this is located 6 miles from downtown, from the courthouse. So they do court transport, but we also made it as part of our design a robust video arraignment system, because as more and more judges become comfortable with video, they're going to use it. And so we went ahead and implemented it. And we also have it because, we sometimes get really nasty weather in Columbus. So we have that as a backup.
Is it on here? I'm where the courtroom would be or where the staging area?
No. So the video arraignment integrated with what we call orientation housing. So as someone comes into the facility, if they're going to stay more than 12 hours, they're moved to a housing area where we keep them for anywhere from 24 to 72 hours. And there, that's where we have the video arraignment, because they're going to have their first appearance there if they do video arraignment for some folks. And also we have social services integrated into that initial housing pod as well, so that they can provide the services and legal counsel to folks so that they can get them out of the facility within a short period of time.
Yeah, to add on to that, to your question, there are facilities that we do that do have maybe the one courtroom. But as David says, as technology is getting better, and I think through the pandemic, I think a lot of the judges started getting more comfortable with video arraignment. Prior to the pandemic, they wanted them in a courtroom. So we were seeing, designing, maybe a courtroom near this area. But then as time went on, the pandemic, those were starting to be vacant a lot as the video arraignment just started becoming kind of a preference of a lot of the judges. But again, I think that's something, as you go through the planning process, is that something that benefits you? I think it's that holistic approach about bringing, all the judicial system into these discussions to decide what is best for you and what works best and the most efficient and makes your operations easier.
Excellent. Thank you for that. Yeah, I am. By the way, also, is this a two-story building or facility, or is it a one-story?
Two-story. Yeah. Okay. And that was driven by the site that was chosen.
Have we seen any
I mean, you would know more than I would about jail construction. Have we seen a lot of jails that go vertical, or we tend to see them more?
Yeah, so if, you know, some of the newer ones, I'll use Nashville again because I was leading that design, and it's next to the courthouse. It has a connection bridge to the courthouse. It's, I think, roughly six stories. Obviously, in urban areas, obviously real estate, you don't have as much real estate. So, you know, a lot of the facilities in these larger urban cities, they are vertical, you know, type facilities just because of that, if that answers your question. But, you know, we see them anywhere from, one to six typically based on the population. Now, we have seen some larger. I have worked on some larger, but those are really kind of rare. So it's typically, you know, if you say vertically, they're probably, you know, I'd say the most common. They get up around six stories, I'd say, which is kind of a housing and a mezzanine, and maybe a housing and a mezzanine, if that makes sense.
And as you continue to build this out, are you going to have juveniles in this in the holding area when you kind of was 1,200 or how many are you building? Is it 1,200 1,800 cells?
Yeah. So altogether, we'll have about 2,800. That's part of our phase three is to determine what we'll do with the juveniles that are going to be remanded to adult court.
I think you have to look at that. I was involved in the design of Pasco County's new facility, working with them. What we did there was we had a corner, obviously total sound site separation, where they could bring juveniles in, kind of away from where the adults were coming in. And then it had a kind of its own intake area, housing, small housing area, and release area where family members could come pick up the child. But again, that's something through that planning process of how you handle that, because it is so critical to the entire design of that sight and sound separation of keeping those, you know, those different populations separated.
So that leads me to another question in general. Are you, again, based on current design standards and what we're seeing across the country, do you ever see a separation of, you know, maybe your pre-detention area or building might be closer to the courthouse, and now your jail might be 7 miles away from the courthouse, a little bit further away, so you have a larger sprawling campus? It's just something that I've personally been considering, and I know Councilman Boylan, I don't know where your head's at either.
Sure.
But, you know, do you ever see that sort of bifurcation or separation of certain facilities based on the nature of their work?
Are you talking about, I'm making sure I understand, like pre-adjudicated versus adjudicated? Is that right?
Correct, yes.
Yeah, you know, obviously, I think it's definitely a consideration, but I think you have to also look at your staffing and what that does to your staffing on that separation of, yes, can you do it? Absolutely. But I think you also have to, again, it's looking at everything together, your operational model. I mean, that, you know, David, please, Eric, jump in. But a lot of times in the same facility, we do want to separate that the pretrial individuals from the other individuals that, you know, have been sentenced already. So, but I think there's multiple ways to look at that. And I think that's just a part of that planning process as you look at, again, that holistic approach of how you operate, how you want to operate in the future. So, but definitely have seen that. It's just a matter of, is that the right approach for you? Having separate buildings, you know, different areas, different locations, but it does also could affect your operations, but, you know, I just don't know enough yet to understand that.
I think that's right. I think that the staff is a key question to that. Everything from, you know, transport, et cetera, but then also just some very practical things like food and laundry and power and utilities and all of those things that are just very practical costs associated with the facility. And so I think it depends on what the goals are for that separation, and can that goal be achieved by co-locating at a facility, but doing a lot of really smart things to keep them separate from a classification standpoint, and then just weighing, you know, those options versus the goals and the objective of having those separate.
No, that's a great point, Eric, because my head wasn't going there. That's why you're on the call. You really don't want two separate kitchens. You really, you know, because then your cost goes up. You really don't want two separate laundries. But if you do one in one of them, then you got to think about the transportation, like Eric was saying. So, you know, all things that are part of that planning process. And it affects schedule and dollars too. So that's the other thing.
By way of background, rightly or wrongly, the way as the chair of the committee, overall committee, I set this up, was getting the three areas we just talked about kind of operating in silos to say what kind of facility or facilities is best serves the needs of, in the case of adjudication, you know, intake, adjudication, and recidivism. In January, the three committees then are working groups will be, these put together, two working groups will come together and make and get a determination from the systems, from JSO, as to how best do we want to approach this in terms of co-location or singular location and that sort of thing. So we'll have you'll have an opportunity to speak to, for us to provide you some feedback as to what we think is the best approach for us as a community, and then for you to be able to give us some feedback at that point in time as to, you know, options as how that would play out.
Talk about all the pros and cons, right?
Absolutely. We'll take a look at that, hash that out for ourselves as to what is the best approach to do this, and that's going to be driven obviously by the court system and JSO themselves, and then for us to say, okay, what's the price tag? Because, you know, the city pays for it, so we need to know what that's going to be too.
Absolutely.
But that conversation will come down the pike. Right now, we're just trying to stay focused, as I said, rightly or wrongly, in the three working group areas as to what's best for that working group in terms of serving the needs of JSO and the system.
Yep. Understood. Thank you for that.
Sure.
May I have permission to turn in?
At the end of the meeting, we'll do public comment. No, ma'am. No, ma'am.
At the end.
Yes.
That's what I was going to say.
Yep. All right. Are there any other? Are we still kind of moving through the presentation? I think there was another slide or two.
Yeah.
I think we had a couple more slides.
Yeah, get through it real quick, David, if you would.
Sure. Yeah. I just wanted to. This is just a picture of the release area. Just wanted to show how the release area and the booking area are on one platform, so they share staff, share information. Lease area has open waiting for those people who are leaving the facility through the front. We also have open cells for those folks that will be leaving the facility through vehicle cellar port and headed to prison. Next. And as people leave the facility through the front door, we have a rapid resource center. This facility is outside of the security perimeter of the jail. And so everyone who's released through the front door will go by this. They're not, they don't have to come here, but it's available to them. And like I said, there's enticements to bring them in, such as phone charging, drinks and snacks. But the whole idea here is interview folks as they come out, trying to understand what their underlying issues are, and to link them with the services that are out in the community. This is part of an overall scheme to reduce recidivism, and because a lot of the folks who come to the facility come over and over again, and so they want to address those underlying issues. So at least they can start to reduce the number of times that folks do come back to the facility.
So, go ahead, please.
Go ahead. And I was just going to say, this is my last slide.
So my question is, like, do you have local nonprofits that kind of put up shop there?
Yes.
Okay. All right. So they're in there, and as you walk out, they could say, hey, I'm with this organization or this group.
Exactly.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, because they're concentrating on getting people back on Medicaid or Medicare. concentrating on mental health services and making those connections. Also, finding folks housing and employment opportunities as well.
Awesome. Mr. Fullwood?
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chair. I was going to ask, this is sort of in my wheelhouse as it relates to reducing recidivism and wraparound services. So the county paid for the facility, and it's just housed or managed by not-for-profits that provide the wraparound services.
They have a justice council within the county, and all these organizations feed into the justice council, so they work as a whole.
Okay, thank you.
But yes, the county did provide the facility for this.
I like that a lot. Judge Cover?
Yeah, I have a question. It seems like there might be some natural benefit to coordinating the pretrial services, which is part of the sheriff's office release services, with these groups or with this center. Is there any real connection?
Yes, yeah, so that was one of the things that they wanted to do here, was to break down those silos and share information about folks. So, yeah, the information that's collected from the pretrial services are then shared with these folks as well.
All right. And would this particular space be shared with the public waiting room? For example, when families come in to pick people up, would they be able to communicate with these groups as they're waiting on?
Yes. It's adjacent to the lobby, and they have their own door. They have their own sign. This is a resource center, and as when they come to pick up their loved one, they can come into this section, which is located right next to the lobby.
The other nice thing about this is, you know, as an individual is getting released, they're trying to help them, you know, whether it's employment, substance abuse, mental health treatment. Then those individuals go back out to the community. But what's nice is, because where it's located, to your question about being connected to the lobby and can people come in, is if those individuals feel that maybe they're falling off their treatment and need some help, they have the opportunity, they can go back. Right, they have that opportunity to go back and say, "Hey, I need some additional help," or "This isn't working." So it gives them that interaction, so they don't end up back on the secure side, and it gives them that opportunity to come back and talk with counselors and individuals to say, "I need maybe some help in this way." Does that make sense?
Yes.
Yeah, I think that's a great resource for folks. And again, you'll see that in Nashville, that it's almost kind of the same space. When they do leave, they have an opportunity to come back if they feel, because obviously, you know, a lot of these individuals go back to the triggers and the communities that got them there in the first place. So having that opportunity and resource to come back and say, "Hey, I need some help before, you know, something bad goes wrong." So. A great feature.
And as you continually mention Nashville, and obviously we've talked today a lot about Columbus, one of my, I don't know if it's a concern or just kind of in my head, you know, does Florida have a certain building code that might be vastly different than the others? Is there anything that they place in their, you know, in their manual that may say, "Hey, yeah, we don't want, you know, I don't know, a center like this at the end," or they have certain square footage, things like that. I don't know. I mean, I just want to make sure that what we're talking about is something that can absolutely be implemented here in Jacksonville.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. There's nothing that would say you can do this. Obviously this is, you know, and again, how robust, maybe it's not as robust, maybe it's more robust. But I think it's bringing, like you're breaking those, like David said, breaking those silos down with all the different, you know, parts of the judicial system, and bringing everybody together and say, you know, what do we want to do with these folks so we can start reducing recidivism and folks entering that we're holding, and how can we get them more help? So, yeah, to your point, again, no, there's nothing that's going to keep you from doing, you know, a program like this.
And was it in Nashville where we had someone speak last week? Was it in Nashville where they have also a like something that's specifically for mental health
folks that are mentally ill, you know, that they're kind of
sick? They have a SPMI unit, severe persistent mental illness area. And when we designed that, again, I'm talking previous life, we weren't sure how many beds to do. And so working with the sheriff's department, because it was something that came up through the design that we implemented and added to the project as we were designing. It wasn't something that was initially programmed, but as we were talking about it, we really felt the desire to have something like that. And it's 60 beds. I believe they've only opened 30 of them now, but you know, in their mind, they have space across the street, and they're hoping that this becomes such a good program to keep folks out of the jail side that they may have to add. You know, we didn't know if 60 was enough, was too many. And I think they're just trying to figure that out, because again, I think the facility's only been open a couple of years now.
And is it physically within the
yes. The
jail? The
prison? Yes.
Okay. So it's not like a standalone building.
No, it's not. It's part of the actual building. It's kind of, imagine when you come into intake, you know, you go to the left to the jail, or you go to the right to get that treatment. So you're not entering the secure side. You know, these individuals, you know, they'll see a judge, they'll go in there. The judge may say, okay, 7 days of, you know, you need some substance abuse treatment or some mental health treatment. But these individuals can leave. They actually can physically leave there because it's not a secure facility. But obviously, if they leave and don't serve their time of what the judge has said, you know, whatever that 17, 14 days program is, you know, obviously if they do get arrested again, you know, that will be on their file. And probably, you know, some type of warrant for not doing the 7 or 21 days or whatever the judge said. But they do have the ability to leave. But they also have, like I was saying, like this facility, they have the ability to come back and say, hey, I need some help again.
So this is still on the intake side that this facility exists. Is there in the, and I know I'm getting a little outside the bounds of my committee, but in the actual housing side, is there also kind of a mental health unit area?
Yeah, absolutely. All our facilities now, I mean, you know, probably over 50% of the folks that you're holding have some sort of mental health issue. You know, areas like I was working with LA County, you know, they're up in the 75% range. So really identifying those classifications and making sure we have appropriate housing is a big deal now. And we can talk about that specifically because, you know, that correctional health care piece is so big right now. And, you know, I believe one of the reasons that why we are on the forefront of it is because we do actually have clinicians on staff at HDR. And, you know, we also have the number one healthcare firm. So we try to blend our healthcare and our justice together because, you know, these really are becoming treatment facilities that need to be secure with the individuals that we're seeing. So we want to make sure that balance of safety and security is absolutely always at first and foremost, but making sure the environments are right for the, like you just said, for, you know, being able to treat these different, you know, acuities of mental health that these individuals are dealing with from the low to the high. So definitely such a serious part of the conversation as you move into these types of buildings now.
Excellent. Well, I genuinely appreciated that. I'm glad to hear. So at the very least 60 beds on the intake side. And yeah, we will need to talk to our friends over at JSO about maybe some numbers or folks that they may see. Mr. Boylan?
Well, if I could take a minute, well, let you finish up this, because I think mine is more concluding remarks about the direction of the working group. I have some thoughts that might be helpful, hopefully.
Absolutely. Do we have anyone on Zoom who might have some comments that they kind of want to throw in? Coral, you've been a little bit more quiet than I would expect.
Okay. So this is Coral. I do have, I guess, two comments. The St. John's County Sheriff's Office partnered with the tax collector last year, and as a part of their reentry process, they're able to help individuals get an ID card, which is a really critical part to assimilation upon release and being able to get access to various resources. And I would really love to see our city follow the same model, and perhaps something like the Rapid Resource Center would be the place where that could happen. My second thought is when we talk about providing facilities for those with serious and persistent mental illness, we may want to build a more robust place. Florida law has changed, so if someone is charged with a felony and they're incompetent to proceed, but they can't be released into the community, they used to go to the state hospital, mm-hmm. and now they're allowing inmates to remain in the local jail in order to receive competency restoration. And those cases are reviewed every 6 months, which means that they could be housed in our local jail for a long time and incompetent and unable to, you know, be adjudicated. And so that's something we'll need to plan for.
I'm really glad you said that, Coral. Tyler, if you can make sure it's in the recommendations. We could also talk about the tax collector's office and see if anything like that is on their wheelhouse already. Do you have any more questions, Coral? I thought you said you had two.
That was two, mental health and ID cards.
Gotcha. Go ahead.
Can I piggyback?
Please.
Can I piggyback on something that Coral just said? And at the same time, if we want to take a shorter field trip than Nashville, the St. Johns County Jail built out a reentry center. So Operation New Hope does soft skills training, job training, wraparound service, and transition planning at the St. Johns County Jail. They took a wing or a building and built it out as a training facility, added the technology needed, et cetera. And so it's been really successful. And we just started about 9 months ago. And it's just the county making the investment. And it's worked out well so far.
I was planning on chartering a private jet for all of us to go to Nashville, but I guess we'll just all drive in my Civic down to down to St. John's County.
Excuse me.
Just head north a little bit, and you can visit Franklin County as well and really take a close look at that Rapid Resource Center.
Chief Pascal, please.
Good morning, everyone. I did want to mention that we do have a Jacksonville Reentry Center that does do some of these things that you all are mentioning. We do have that wraparound service. We do provide ID cards, and the individual has to pay for them, but we allow them if there's a need for the ID cards, the birth certificates, or any of those other services and housing that's offered to them, they get that opportunity.
Where is that in the physical building?
That is not in the physical building. It is located on Superior Street on the northwest side of Jacksonville.
Okay. So you guys have those services available. That's huge to know. Okay. Mm-hmm. Just not physically connected. Are there any more comments or questions?
I would say it was one thing that stuck with me, and I'm not sure which gentleman mentioned it, that at that facility 70% of people who come in are released within 24 hours. I would be interested to know the percentage here, and then, like, what are the factors? Because that seems like a pretty good percentage. Like, is it based on the type of crimes that's committed in that county, or is it just the effectiveness of the intake and release system? I would want to know more about that and see if there's some best practices maybe we can try to think about with this group.
Did you guys kind of hear all that?
I was trying. I didn't. Can you kind of?
Yeah, I was saying. I think I wasn't sure which person mentioned the 70% of people who come into that facility there are released or come out within 24 hours. So if there was just right. any more information about how that works, I don't know if it's just the types of crimes that are committed in that area or that county, or if it's part of the effectiveness of the intake and release system, but we'll be both interested in knowing the percentage here in Duval County, and then if there's any best practices or anything you can share about how they get to that number on a consistent basis.
Yeah, David, I think that's for you, and maybe getting that additional information, or maybe you can talk about it a little bit, but maybe getting them in touch with someone to maybe address how they're doing that.
Yeah, I can get you in touch with folks that can help with that sharing of data. But yeah, it's a process of getting folks out within a short period of time, and that's where everyone comes together: pretrial services, social services, mental health folks, in order to give the judges the information they need to lower bonds and also maybe not have any bond at all and deflect people from the facility. So yeah, I can get you in touch with folks that can get you more information.
Awesome. Thank you.
I had just a quick comment. It sounds like, I think I heard it right, you kind of have these three working groups, but, you know, I think because the mental health, the behavioral health in these facilities is so critical, you know, I'd throw out, you know, if there's an opportunity for us to just focus on that maybe in a meeting and talk about what we're doing on that end of it as we look at these facilities, because we do have a group that's specifically dedicated to that component of these types of facilities that are subject matter experts that I'd like for you to bombard them with questions, because I do believe it's so critical and it's such a big part of the, you know, your community in dealing with these individuals that maybe there's a specific opportunity to maybe have a workshop like that. So just throwing it out there.
I venture to guess that the status or progress of the initial various working groups is staggered, and that is the one that needs some time and attention on. Tracy knows Councilmember Johnson's heading that working group up, and I'm really trying to get him to the next level to have those kind of connections to folks like yourselves who can help them with that.
And no, that's great.
Yeah, and if I might just go ahead and follow up where I was going to take in the concluding piece of this. I think the hard part, and I will tell you, in the working group that's which I'm heading, it's not because I'm heading it, the police memorial building, JSO came to our last meeting and gave us, this is what we are looking for as a future of our building. And it was easy for them to do because they're all together and doing it. This one is even more challenging. So I get it. We're kind of working backwards here. It's like, what's being done out there? How do we want to do it? I don't know how we can bring the chief in and Carl and Eve to say, this is what we think we need to have, and so that the best practices and comparisons can be made based upon what your vision is for this process. So I know that's hard, but I think that's really, I think it'd be helpful for HDR and others who are going to respond to it to get to that point in time that you can say, and maybe after next week's meeting you can do that, to say, okay, guys, let's get together and figure out just exactly what is our dream world look like for this process? Mm-hmm. What kind of facility do we need to address it? And be free to say, you know, we want temporary housing adjacent to or close to the, you know, the courthouse. You know, we have a great deal of importance on, we love the idea of the freestanding adjacent facility to support families as they get released. That kind of thing I think would be helpful for you to put a stake in the ground at some point to say, this is what we envision.
So, Councilman Boylan, we make sure that Tyler puts a list of recommendations from this committee that we're all going to talk about at the very last meeting to say which of those we elevate up to the final board.
My only suggestion was maybe step that up one so that you can get another reaction to whatever you envision that to look like. Even today, these are our recommendations thus far for HDR and others to respond to the recommendations. So they have something to work from. They're sharing with you what they're doing now, but it doesn't necessarily reflect what we might think is our priority. You as a group might not think is a priority. I'm just a suggestion to follow.
Judge Gopher.
A couple of things, just an update. I've spoken with Judge Khalil, and I'll be meeting with the county judges on November 8th at their regular meeting to try to get some feedback from them on the issue of whether or not we include a first appearance court facility in this facility. In another vein, I have pulled the minutes of that Tyler's prepared of our earlier meetings, and I've already, for my purposes, started putting together and organizing a list of the recommendations that we've heard from different groups, just to give us some kind of a working document. It's just for my purposes, and I think at some point I can share it with the other members of the committee to see where we're going with it, for us to use as a, you know, these are the things we've heard and suggestions to help maybe get us closer and assist us in making recommendations as a committee. It's just mine, and I don't know if y'all want me to share it. It's still very roughed out, but
whenever you'd like to, yeah, Tyler. This is
should I just send it to Tyler? And it's a document in the work. It's a working document. Just to,
if you think it's better to send it to him earlier rather than when we're all done with our part of the subcommittee, you may. I mean, okay. Yeah, that's let's talk offline.
I've heard a lot today that I want to add in, and there's some open things about IT stuff that I'm still working on, but I can share it with him with the understanding that it's just a very preliminary draft of just bullet points, boom, 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 of issues.
Excellent.
That's great.
Are there any other comments before we go to public comment? Anyone else on Zoom? All right. Colonel Oliver, please come up. You have 3 minutes to speak. Thank you for being with us today.
All right. My name is Colonel Oliver. Address is on file. Number one, I think it's a conflict of interest. I already see way one of the board members are going. They're trying to get some hands on some money for their facility. I think for the reentry facility, Operation New Hope already has a contract with the state through the Department of Correction. They just got access to Claytown, and they got access in St. John's County. You're creating a monopoly. No competition. You don't get access to this facility. If JSO wants to keep it in-house, give them the necessary resources so that they can do it. I'm at that point with all this money being doled out to a bunch of nonprofits. There are too many people getting their hands on it. And the return on investment is a band-aid. I want to fix these problems. Just like that noise they're making out there, The city's paying for it. When we talk about this new facility, I know y'all wasted a lot of time talking about simple pretrial center. If you want to cut through the chase, bring in the folks that designed the Nashville jail. Because that's what JSO want. And I know it's what they want because simple fact is that I'm reading between the lines. You ain't doing nothing but putting on a front. You just need to go ahead and just outline everything everybody wants. Because you're wasting my time because I want to see who's going to be getting that money coming from the nonprofit sector. That's what I want to see.
Thank you, sir. And then Mary McGrath Wood.
Yes.
And you have 3 minutes, ma'am.
My main concern is with extended stay inmates and also the mentally ill and the drug abuse people who are in the jail. And I'm concerned about reducing recidivism, reducing costs by means of attaining a federal grant. The federal grant offers all the help we can manage with rehabilitation, and it aims at keeping those in mainly for drug abuse issues or for mental health issues, sidetracking them, not into the jail at all, but various diversion programs that they provide funding for, including funding for supervision of such programs to treat those who are suffering from drug abuse issues or mental health issues. And those grants offer large amounts of money, and they of course will be expecting oversight reports. But as Mr. Ronan Johnson reported at the other jail committee meeting, Los Angeles reduced its jail population from 10,000 to 4,800. Los Angeles, California, 10,000 to 4,800, over half, in other words, 50% reduction by means of those. They also have police community outreach programs that's eliminated our problems because I used to live there in Orange County, California, south of Los Angeles County. We had the Bloods and the Crips gangs out there, and police outreach programs managed to redirect energies and solve all kinds of issues so that that Los Angeles seems to have problems with those gangs. And we suffered in that whole area of Southern California drive-by shootings, two or three a week on the freeways. Anybody could get caught in the crossfire, children, adults, anybody driving by. So I would like to hand in this...
Please give that to Tyler or to Brooks.
Oh, there you go. Thank you. I put on all the people I would like, every one of you. And I'd like to add Mr. Reggie Forward. I couldn't see your name from back, but Mr. Reggie Forward among the copies to receive. And I would like them to see just my statement more extended. Thank you.
And that's 3 minutes. Thank you so much, ma'am. Any more comment from anyone on the committee? Seeing none, thank you so much. We will be meeting again next Friday at the same time.
Thursday.
Damn it. Sorry. Man, I almost closed this out really well. We'll be meeting on Thursday morning to do our tour of the UF Health facility over in Springfield. Thank you so much, everyone. Enjoy your Friday.
All right. Thank you.
The longer you go on these things,
I have to talk to him next time he's hanging out in our parking lot.
That's why I was going to say.
I mean,
just keep up.
Of all of these,
should I cut off?
Well, thank you for that.
Sure, that would be helpful to me.
I've got one of the easier ones. I can't complain about it. Oh,
okay. Yeah, that's what I was going to ask.
I wish I could brag.
I got jumping on her. Oh, yeah. She said she had a
I appreciated your question.
Thank you.
About
you come by.
No, I just
wanted
to ask.
Maybe a designer, but
I'm
busy.
How are you?
If you build it, they will film it.
I don't know what it
is. That's what happened with the president. It's going to be largely after asphalt service. You won't fill it until next number 20 years later. And it was filled with it.
Yeah. Well, hello. I'm in the healthcare market, so many of my healthcare. Good to see you.
Always good to see you.
So are you making it down the door and they're maxed out and then they're building the next meeting?
That's what I was about to say. I'm like, I don't know. I'm going to the Democratic
Convention.
Which is why I was like, I don't know. But no, I was.
Yeah. Wait, where are you going?
So I appreciate the question. Thank you.
Oh,
hey, how are you?
Good.
That's
amateur
hour.
Happy Friday. Yeah, we did. We got angry.
I don't want to get upset by
a giant person in Georgia.
And the likelihood of that happening goes up 70% by being in that vicinity. Are you doing Florida, Georgia?
No, I'm going to lunch today, but that's all. I don't do that.
There's a lunch?
We go to lunch and we're at the East Gate, East Side.
Hey, I'm good. How are you?
It's 11:30 if you want to go.
I mean, I am hungry.
They got two tables for us.
Could use a free meal. No, I got to run to
Spar.
We'll jump on that.
11:30, so you got good.
We got to go.
We
got to go to
Springfield. How are you?
Yes. And then I'll get with you on attendees.
I made sure you
yes, it's an out-of-calendar invite. I imagine most of them will have responded.
Okay. But we do want to talk about the mental health. I know that you're
Yeah, we
felt like this was detailed enough to give you a really good understanding of just that one area and what you can do. And you know, obviously it's quarter to but we can
let me get see if we get Councilman Johnson moving forward on
I've reached out to him several times and I apologize.
You're not alone.
Okay. Yeah. We wanna give you the stuff that you guys need.
Sure. There's so many moving parts to it, and, you know, you just
got to bite off one piece at a time, right? But then it's all going to come together in some capacity. I'll be
finishing up this PhD
lab. I'm
going to see it.
And I
am
going
to be wrong. Do you know about the next one? Her family used to be
there you go. It's a little bit like at a wedding. There's like a receiving line.
That's my concern.
Does he? It's committee of one right now, but he's got some working group people. He's only had one meeting. Which, I know. Yeah.